This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's great to be back in the seat again, in the saddle again, after our graduation ceremonies last week. We're in the George Mason Arts Auditorium, and we filled the auditorium, had lots and lots of graduates. It was extremely inspiring, the graduation. All of our graduations are, and it's always the student speakers who are the very best at explaining how they've overcome all of their trials and tribulations and have gone on to be successful graduates at Stratford University. We also just had a team of folks from Stratford come back from Monaco.
Really?
We were given a global award from the Thousand Acts of Peace Foundation. There were five global awards. We received one for a project that our students did at the Falls Church in Woodbridge. And one of the Nobel Prize laureates presented the award. It was a very big event there in Monaco. There was some kind of film festival going on at the same time, so it was sort of part of that. So we were really quite pleased to be part of that activity. That all came about because the connection that we made with Chade-Meng Tang, who is the author of Search Inside Yourself, the Google guy, was sort of mindful leadership, the mindful emotional intelligence that leads to level five leadership. This was a course that we teach at Stratford, and because of then we then got to know Chade-Meng Tang, and he recommended that we become the first university partner of A Billion Acts of Peace, and we've been doing that ever since. It's really a nice opportunity for our students to give back, because the way to have true contentment is to give, and we like to show that with our students. It's also been a very big, big week in technology. We'll talk about, they now have text walking lanes.
What?
Have you ever had somebody just bump into you because they're staring at their...
I thought you meant it was maybe an area where the data speed was slow. So
No.
Walking and running.
Yeah, text walking lanes. And now there's, you know, the voting machines are back in the news again because they're so easily hacked.
Yeah.
And the internet of things needs some standards. So I'll talk a bit about that. You know, I've got one of the internet of things at home with my Amazon Echo. I talk to it all the time, but they really do need some standards. And I've got a few tips on how to control the storage problem in your cell phone. You ever get like out of storage errors all the time?
Mm-hmm.
I do too, and that. So I'll talk about how to address that.
Good.
And also, I'm going to briefly talk about how projects and coding can really build the kind of skills that employers want. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
There's a letter in
Giant.
Your mailbox.
Oh, yeah. We got an email from a listener in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, could you please share your opinion on the Keypoint government solutions breach? I got a letter from DHS today. Keypoint, who is the government contractor for security clearance, background checks, works for contractors, apparently was given my personal data, and they were hacked. And now my personal data has been compromised. Department of Homeland Security has offered a free 18-month identity protection service through All Clear ID. Have you ever heard of All Clear ID? And what happens when they get breached? You know, others have gotten this letter. Thanks. We love the show, a listener in Bethesda. Well, let's talk about this Keypoint breach. The Keypoint government solutions that took over the bulk of federal background checks after one of its competitors was hacked was also suffered a hack very recently. The Office of Personnel Management notified or is notifying 48,000 federal workers who had their personal information exposed. Now, this breach just came a few months after OPM decided not to renew the contract with USIS, because they had suffered a breach. So they there's really a real problem with OPM. They just jumping around to contractors is not necessarily going to solve these breaches, because they're being targeted by the Chinese apparently. Mm-hmm. And they're just tracking whoever the contractor is. So unless OPM builds up best practices in security, just jumping to another contractor is not going to help. And obviously, this demonstrates that in spades. Now, OPM selected this company, All Clear ID, for identity protection. Now, All Clear ID has been around for around 10 years. So, you know, I've never used them. But I checked with the bestidtheftcompanies.com, which sort of ranks them all, and they were number 10 on the list. Number 1 was LifeLock. They got 4.5 stars in terms of identity theft protection. All Clear ID got 2 stars in terms of identity theft protection. So I don't really think they're the best ones for identity theft protection. They did rank very high in consumer service. So they are a little cheaper than LifeLock. So maybe that's why OPM picked them. if I were gonna pick my,
I'd pick the most secure, right?
Yeah, I'd probably pick the one that was best on security theft protection. That's what I would do. So it's better than nothing, I can say.
I guess.
And there, I was reading there was some congressional inquiry into how they were selecting the identity theft methods and who they were picking, and so there'll probably be some additional investigation into that. We got an email from Leslie in Oakton. Dear Doc and Jim, you talked about simultaneous voice and data on the iPhone 6 from Verizon. How do I enable this feature? Thanks, Leslie in Oakton. Okay, well, we did talk about it, how great it was, and I guess I didn't give you the details on how to do it. Okay, this is called HD calling. HD calling, high definition calling. If you're talking to another phone that's got HD calling enabled, it sounds like they're just in the next room. You get very excellent phone conversations. Now, HD calling AT&T has had it, and a number of the other carriers have had it for a long time. Verizon never got it until recently, and so now they've enabled HD calling, and it's now enabled on the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, but nothing older than the iPhone 6 or 6 Plus. Now, the good thing about HD calling is that it also includes simultaneous voice and data. So what you want to do, you want to go to settings on your iPhone. You actually have to enable it. You want to go to settings, and then you select cellular. And then under cellular, you want to check off voice and data. Now, probably only data is checked, so you want to do voice and data. And then as soon as you do that, there'll be this little spinning cursor. You sit there and watch it spin away. And what it's doing, it's logging into your Verizon account and it's setting that provision, because Verizon has to provision you for HD calling. So as soon as that's done, bingo, you're set. When the cursor stops, you'll be provisioned for HD calling. So you've had this, if you're using LTE, the latest generation cellular network on AT&T, you've had this really capability for years. But fortunately, it's now available for Verizon. That is the reason that I'm going to upgrade to an iPhone 6.
Really?
I want to get simultaneous voice and data, because the frustration that I have is I love to use Waze for my navigation.
Yeah, I know.
So if somebody calls me and I'm talking on the phone, my Waze is disconnected from the network.
Right.
And so I have to cut the call short or else be misdirected. So it's all right, because Waze has a lot of local information. It's just that you don't get updates in case there's an accident or something.
Right.
So you really want to be connected to the network so you can be redirected dynamically. So that is specifically why I intend to get an iPhone 6 so I can have the simultaneous voice and data. We got an email from Adam in Michigan. Dear Tech Talk, I just got a laptop and I like to back up my data. I travel a lot. And I'm a little worried that in the event my laptop's stolen or something like that, I'd lose all my data. What are my options? Love the show, Adam in Michigan. Well, I mean, there are two issues, Adam, here. You could, if the data that you've got is highly secure, you may want to encrypt your hard drive. So it takes, you've got to log on, and then people that can't get at your data unless they've got your password. So you could have an encrypted hard drive if you've got highly confidential data. Now, if you're just worried about recovering the data in the event you lose the laptop, you don't have to worry about that. Like, you have like family pictures and things like that. You may not have to worry about this encrypted hard drive, and you just want to back it up. Now, I went to PC Magazine, and I got the top four backup services that they were recommending was iDrive. Well, they had for number one, Crash Plan number two, SOS Online Backup number three, and Carbonite number four. They all run about $59 a year. I think SOS Online Backup might have been $79 a year, and some are for multiple computers, some are for just one computer. Now, I actually have Carbonite, which I've been using for many years. I like it. It's $59 a year, and you have, but it's only good for one computer. But you have unlimited backup, no matter how much storage, no matter how big your hard drive is, it'll back it all up. And so that Carbonite has been extremely useful. I had one hard drive crash, and I was able to just get all my data in a snap.
That's cool.
No problem at all. The only disadvantage, of course, is when you first activate these backups, it might take a day to back up a whole huge hard drive.
Yeah, sure.
And then the laptop keeps going to sleep, and then it stops backing up. So then you've got to turn off the Hibernate, so it'll just stay on until it finishes the job. Now, you have other options, too. You've got Microsoft OneDrive. You've got Google Drive, you've got Box, and you've got Dropbox. Now, these are very good for file synchronizations. And what you have to do then, you can actually synchronize a whole subdirectory. And whenever you put a file into that subdirectory, it will automatically be synchronized and put in either OneDrive, Google Drive, Box, or Dropbox. So that's a good way. Also, it's not this complete and automatic backup of the whole hard drive. It's not quite as convenient as Carbonite, but it's not bad. Now, what I do, I use Dropbox too. So I have Dropbox set up. Actually, I've got a lot of them set up because I like to just play with this stuff.
Sure.
So I've got OneDrive, I got Google Drive, I got Dropbox. What I like about Dropbox is if I've got some giant file, well, like a drone video.
Yeah.
Let's think. I got a drone video, and it's just a giant file.
But you really wouldn't.
And I want to share it with someone. Well, it would only be a drone video that where I was flying the drone legally.
Of course.
Because that's all I would do. And so if I have this giant drone video, I typically will upload it to Dropbox, and then I can share the link to either that file or to the subdirectory with someone, and I don't have to mail a giant attachment to someone. So I use Dropbox when I want to share a large file, and I use Carbonite when I'm going to back it up. I think it's wise to back up your data. No matter what you think, there's going to be hard drives do fail. They're not made to be perfect. They're made to be as good as they can be, but they do fail. They're mechanical devices. So if you've got critical data, you always, always want to back it up. We got an email from Alice in Alexandria. Dear Doc and Jim, I'd love to try some 3D printing. What printers do you recommend, Alice in Alexandria? Well, Alice, I'm kind of, I like this email because I'm kind of thinking of getting a 3D printer.
I was wondering where you would do this.
Because 3D printers have come down to the cost of a drone, actually. They've really come down in price. So, you can get some 3D printers for as low as $600. Now, home 3D printers mostly use a process called filament deposition manufacturing. Filament deposition manufacturing, or fused filament fabrication. In other words, they take a drop of something and it cures with UV light. Now, a plastic filament can either be made from ABS, which is a very complicated chemical name, or from PLA, which is polylactic acid. So those are the two different kinds of filaments. The ABS is acrylonitrile butadiene styrene.
Good luck with that.
Styrene. Mm-hmm. Styrene, yes. And so that would be ABS or PLA. These are two different kinds of plastics. Now, I went to Tom's Guide. See, I don't have one yet, Alice. So this, I sort of like this email. So I thought, well, I'm going to do a little research. I like Tom's Guide. He's sort of an independent hardware guy. He hasn't, you know, sold out. I read Tom's guide quite often. I want to look at stuff. And so he basically had four recommendations in four categories: the best budget 3D printer, the best intermediate 3D printer, the best enthusiast 3D printer. See, maybe I would be an enthusiast.
Yes.
Or the best resin printer. Okay, the best budget printer is the printer bought simple metal. It has a 100 micron layer resolution. That's how thin the layers are, 100 microns. It's a PLA type of printer, and it's $600 on Amazon. That's the printer bought simple metal, $599 on Amazon. If you want to get the best intermediate printer, they got the Lulzbot, L-U-L-Z-B-O-T Mini. That has also 100 micron resolution. Now, it will do either PLA or ABS. It also will print nylon as well as other materials. So you've got more flexibility in what you're printing, which I think means you've got, you know, better options in when you're going to do printing. Now, that's $1,350 on Amazon. Now, the best enthusiast. Now, see, by the way, that $1,350 is about the price of a drone.
That's right, yeah.
So maybe I'd be best intermediate printer because I'm, you know, it's about a drone price.
I think, personally, you would get bored with it because it wouldn't do. You're a tech guy.
Yeah, that's true. And so now we have the best enthusiast 3D printer. This is the Ultimaker 2 and 3D printer. It has got a layer resolution of 20 to 200 microns. It does both PLA as ABS. That's $2,500 on Dynamism. And then we got the best resin printer. This actually uses a resin instead of a plastic, and this is for high-volume production, Form Labs Form 1 Plus. It has a 25-micron layer resolution, and it's $3,200 from Form Labs. So you can see that 3D printers have come down. But here is the issue. You can't print color. You see, there's no color. It's just one color.
What's the point, then?
It's one color. So it's like a monochrome print. So there are people that are developing now color 3D printers are not out yet. So this is like you got one color. That's it.
What's the point then?
Because you're printing shapes. You could print a complex shape. So you could print, a complex latticework shape. And then if you want to, I guess you could paint it. But it's really meant for 3D shapes. But you can't really print color. But
let me ask you this: what are the at home applications of this? What would you use it for at home?
you could. Okay, for instance, I could take and download a 3D model, say Michelangelo's David.
Okay,
and I could print it at home.
Okay,
so you could print artwork at home if you would want. I mean, that's
all right.
That would just be one. That would be one application. Or suppose you might have. I mean, you could make any kind of plastic. Suppose you, instead of going to the store and buying like a spoon for your to stir in the pot, you could just make your own. and so these.
It seems like a really expensive way to get a spoon.
Yeah, but so.
But it's fun.
That is the point.
Now I can see, if you when color gets into the mix here, so to speak, I guess people who do sort of at home crafting or at home, like if people wanted to make key fobs or something like that and sell them,
yeah,
you could probably do something like that or.
You could,
right?
That's right. You could. You see, now these are all just resins and plastics, and they're cured with UV. You can't actually get 3D printers that will do metal, but when you do that, it lays down a powder, and then a laser beam melts the powder.
Wow!
And then forms a thin layer of metal.
Uh huh.
Now those are really expensive.
I'll bet.
So like Elon Musk makes some of the parts for his SpaceX engines using 3D printing, and they'll print titanium. And so so you can actually do it in on different kinds of materials, but if you get the laser, the laser melting of metal powder, those are really expensive. Those are industrial grade. So this is like low quality, plastic things.
Right.
So
sure.
I think at this point it's just like playing. But it's the kind of playing that I would enjoy. And then the thing is, you could, and then what you want to do is you have to learn how to make the three-dimensional files that you're going to print, because you have to actually have to have a three-dimensional model when you're going to print it. So there are standardized file formats for these files. And it turned out that the Smithsonian has done three-dimensional scans of the bulk of their artwork.
Really?
And they have posted the three-dimensional models of their artwork online.
Huh.
So actually, if you go in and see a particular sculpture that you really like, you can just make a model of it at home. Now, I don't know. It just would be sort of fun to do that,
sure.
I suppose.
Why not? Okay.
But that's still in the category of playing.
It would be, yes.
Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you at the next show, or we may even answer your email directly.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's Saturday morning, and this is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome. We are in the virtual faculty lounge talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Douglas Reed Cutting. Douglas Reed Cutting, as his mom would call him,
right,
is an open-source software advocate who's best known as the creator of Hadoop. You talk about...
Not heard of Hadoop.
You've never heard of Hadoop. I'm going to tell you where that came from. Well, I'll tell you now. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Where it came from, Hadoop. Also, Lucene, which is a search indexer, and Nooch, which is a spider or web crawler. So these are actually three major projects that have had tremendous impact in the search world and in big data, in the big data world. And so this guy's quite a luminary in the open source arena. He received a Bachelor of Arts in Linguistics from Stanford University in 1985. While he was at Stanford, he was a member of the Stanford crew team.
Mm-hmm.
So he enjoyed the crew. In February 1986, right after he graduated from Stanford, he was hired as a research assistant for the Center for Speech Technology in Edinburgh, Scotland. A year and a half later, on June of 87, he became a member of the research staff at Xerox Palo Alto Research Center. This was at the peak of their innovation time. This was around the same time that, you know, they're working on the graphical user interface. A lot of the ideas that came in on the Apple actually came out of Xerox PARC. So he was there at Xerox PARC at a time when there were many, many luminaries working there that went on to make huge impact in the world of technology. 5 years later, in July of 1992, he was hired by none other than Apple Computer, because, of course, Apple was trying to, you know, lift a lot of the PARC technology there, Palo Alto Research Center technology. He was hired as a senior technologist in the Advanced Technology Group. And he stayed at Apple for about 3 years, and he was hired as a principal engineer at Excite. Now, it turned out that all three of the companies, both at Park, at Apple, and Excite, he worked on search engine technology. So he seemed to be the guy that sort of gravitated towards search. In 1999, Doug Cutting wrote Lucerne, which was an open-source search indexer program. It was available, Doug Cutting was one of these guys that would work for businesses on specific problems, and then at home, he would write open source code because he was like a true open source advocate, but he had to earn money, so he'd do something for the companies that was proprietary, and at home, he'd have his own activity going on writing code. So he learned a lot about search engine technology and wrote his own open source code, Lucene. And it was a search indexer. It was initially available for download from SourceForge, which, of course, is the Linux Linux site for all the Linux open source stuff. It became part of the Apache Software Foundation Jakarta family of open source Java products in 2001. In September of 2000, he was hired as the principal engineer of InfraSearch. And in February of 2001, he was hired as a principal engineer in Grand Central. Both of these were a continuation of his interest in search. Cutting, along with Mike Caffarella, then created Nutch, N-U-T-C-H, Nutch, which was an open source spider or crawler. You see, when you're doing search work, first of all, you got to find all the pages, you got to crawl around, find all the pages, follow all the links, you crawl and you aggregate all this data, then you got to somehow index it. So, So they wrote Nutch as the spider or the crawler, and this was also open source. In June 2003, they successfully demonstrated a 10 million page demonstration system to demonstrate that they could really do large scale search, crawling, and then indexing. Now, around this, in 2004, Google published a paper where they talked about their map reduce algorithm, and that allowed large-scale computations to be distributed among large clusters of servers on a distributed file system. It's called the map reduce algorithm. So he decided to actually take his two programs, which were the Nutch and then the original one, Lucene, and apply it so that it could be done in a distributed system across clusters of machines using the Google's MapReduce algorithm. So he did that, and that whole thing was spun out into a project called Hadoop, where they were basically going to develop a method to do processing across clusters, but the whole Hadoop algorithm was all open source. So the Apache Hadoop software library that he developed as an open source project was actually a framework that allows for distributed processing of large data sets across clusters of computers. The software itself is designed to detect and handle failures in the application layer. So the idea was that you've got a bunch of computers out there that you can't really trust. You know, computers fail.
Right.
So the software will detect a failing computer and automatically correct and just move everything else to the other computer. So you don't have to worry about this, any kind of hardware failure. And then the engineers just come in and they swap out another computer for the one that failed. And so all of this correction is in the software layer. So this Hadoop became a very big part of what they call big data. So the Hadoop architecture is an open source architecture, which has been used by many companies then to support big data analysis, big data computation. Now, his first application was for the search algorithm and spidering algorithm, but it's been applied very broadly. Now, Hadoop is an interesting name.
It is.
So you'd think that this would have been some kind of acronym. No. It turned out when Doug was 2 years old, his mom gave him a yellow toy elephant, and he couldn't speak, and so for some reason he started calling his little yellow toy elephant Hadoop, and so he named the software after his yellow toy elephant.
That's pretty
Hadoop.
Funny. It's pretty funny.
So you know, I I had to search for that, by the way. Because,
I'll bet you did.
Because that is not...
You have to go beneath the surface.
Beneath the surface to get that, because that is not... You look up on the Wikipedia page, Hadoop, they don't talk about the yellow toy elephant.
No, they don't.
No. You find that kind of stuff here on Tech
That's
Talk.
That's right. You have to come only here to get
That's
stuff.
That's right. So it turned out then he worked on three open source projects that had tremendous impact. The search engine Lucene, then he did the spidering engine, and then he came up the distributed processing based on the map reduce algorithm called Hadoop. Now in 2005, they also added Nudge, which is the indexing algorithm to the Apache incubator. And then it ultimately graduated from the incubator to become a subproject of Lucene in June of 2005. Now, Nutch and Lucene and Hadoop led to Solr, which is a popular enterprise search engine that competes with the Google search appliance. So many websites will have a built-in search, and it'll be based on this particular method. It'll be the Solr architecture. And they'll do an internal search of the website, like Wikipedia uses that, for instance. In April 2005, he became a director of the Internet Archives. He was director of search, as you would expect, because he's devoted his open source work to search. He became director of search for the Internet Archive, which archives all websites. So you can look up a site, what it looked like in 2000, and see how it's evolved over time, and they archive all that information. In January of 2006, he became a technical Yahoo. At Yahoo, so you don't become a technical research.
Yahoo.
Yeah, become a technical Yahoo. See, everybody's a Yahoo at Yahoo.
Right.
Now, at Yahoo, because Yahoo was trying to get into the search business, too, they're trying to compete with Google. So, and he led the Hadoop project at Yahoo. So I'm just wondering whether I just wonder whether he had his little toy elephant there, yellow toy elephant, with him in the office.
I wonder.
I did find a picture of him holding his yellow toy elephant, by the way. Yeah. But I don't know whether that was the original yellow toy elephant.
Or a reproduction.
Yeah,
that he used a digital printer to make.
Yeah, he could have done that. Then in 2009, Cutting was elected to the board of directors of the Apache Software Foundation because he had really devoted his life to open source. And Apache, of course, is a nonprofit devoted to open source. And in September 2010, he was elected the chairman of the board. Now, he had served as a software committer for Apache since June of 2001. So he was a software committer for almost 14 years. So what a software committer does, you'll have all these open source contributions, and then somebody's got to make the final decision, we're going to go with these changes and commit them to production. So that's the final quality control. So that's a very important job there at Apache, and he was a software committer since 2001. In September of 2009, he became chief architect of Cloudera. Now, Cloudera is an American-based software company that provides Apache Hadoop-based software support and services and training to business customers. So all businesses say, hey, we've got to get into big data, got to figure out what we're going to do. And so basically they provide access to open-source big data solutions, Cloudera. Now, Cloudera's open-source Apache Hadoop distribution, and the Cloudera distribution that includes Apache Hadoop, it actually targets enterprise class deployments of that technology. So now he's sort of moving back and forth between making open source software. Now he's making money in deploying the open source software and applying it to particular business problems. So this guy, Douglas Reed Cutting, is known as one of the most innovative individuals in technology. He contributed to three open source projects, actually started three open source projects that had a tremendous impact: Hadoop, Lucene, and Nutch.
Now, you know, I went and just looked at a picture of Hadoop. I saw the picture you saw. That's got to be a reproduction, because what do two-year-olds do?
They chew
and drool on
things.
That's right. This thing, the Hadoop is just too clean
That Hadoop looks too new.
Yeah, it does. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Hope you're paying attention. This is your chance in just a moment to turn your knowledge into free food when you play the pop quiz here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. We will be right back.
It's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airways. And of course, if it's a classroom, there has to be an assessment. So today we're going to have a pop quiz. If you get the right answer to the pop quiz, you get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Douglas Reed Cutting. He, of course, is an open source advocate who was creator of Hadoop for big data, Lucene as a search indexer, and Nudge as a spider or a crawler. The question we have today is, where did the name Hadoop come from?
If you have the answer, you need to call us right now. If you're calling from west of Edinburgh, Scotland, you must be west of Edinburgh, Scotland, and the number is 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Palo Alto, California, 877-936-9333. If you're somewhere other than that, call us on the wildcard line, which is 877-936-9333. But I'm sure Mr. Technology has another
idea. That's right. If you're calling from one of the Google Loon hot air balloons... Actually, helium balloons. You can reach us on Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded to the studio free of charge.
I think I know who's been on one of those helium balloons.
Yes, you never know.
Guy across the board from
me
here.
It's possible. It is possible.
I just call 877-936-9333. In fact, that's just me.
I know. That's just. But that's just.
But I'm low tech.
No, that's a plain old.
Plain old POTS line. And, I mean, this is the guy who had to explain, you know, how to.
That's
fix
right.
Fix his Wi-Fi.
Okay, now let's talk about the stupid idea of the week.
Okay.
These are text walking lanes. Now, the city of Belgium has created text walking lanes. These are special lanes that have been painted into a number of Antwerp's busiest shopping streets. So, you know, have you ever been, you know, people are just looking down and they bump into you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So now everybody can just sort of, if they're going to text and play with their cell phone, they have to be in the text walking lane. Now, these lanes were set up by the local mobile firm, MLab, and so they started putting them around town, and everybody, they did it originally as kind of a marketing stunt, and then people started using them. And they would kind of walk down, and they would do texting while they're walking down. It would keep them from rolling into poles or running into other people. I mean, you've always seen some people who just like walk across the street in front of a car while they're texting.
You know, this is I was just thinking, how many people have been killed walking in front of a bus or a train while they were texting?
As, I mean, there are people like that have walked off the end of a pier or into a canal while texting. They just sort of walk and fall into the water. So
and they wreck their phone.
So what happens is that these text lanes, they keep you away from the water. And so actually, maybe they should just not allow texting and walking at the same time. I think so.
You know, the thing is, government can turn this into another revenue enhancement idea. They could start writing tickets for texting and walking.
That's right. They mm-hmm. think they could get a boatload of money.
I'd be a good politician or a good bureaucrat. I have all these ideas.
That is right. So there is the stupid idea of the week. And I also found an elementary school that had texting lanes on the stairs.
Oh, that's even more dangerous. Walking up and down steps while texting.
That's
good idea.
Right.
We don't have a winner yet, so the question again, Dr. Schertz, is...
The question again is, we were talking about Douglas Reed Cutting. He, of course, was creator of Hadoop, which was a way for doing big data processing across multiple clusters of computers. Where did the name Hadoop come from?
And once again, the number to call is 877-936-9333, and forget about the Skype thing. Did I say that? Yes. Okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
Now, ballot machines, you know, voting machines are really easy hacking targets. Mm-hmm. This comes up every year. So the Commonwealth Security and Risk Management in Virginia, in the Virginia Information Technology Agency, looked at their AVS Win vote machines that have been used in Virginia since 2002. And they discovered that you could break into these machines from the parking lot using the Wi-Fi link.
What?
Great. Now, the report was commissioned after one precinct in Virginia reported unusual activity on the devices used to capture votes during the last November's election. I mean, there was something like there were more votes than there were people in the district or something. And so they noted several security deficiencies, including physical controls, network access, operating system controls, data protection, voter tallying process. None of it conformed to best practices in software development. And many of the machines had default passwords on the Wi-Fi. So you could sit out in your car, log on to a voting machine using the default password, and you could change the vote tallies.
Wow.
Now, that's problematic.
Yeah, it is.
That's problematic.
It kind of ruins the whole concept of voting.
That's right. Now they said that there's no evidence that the vote tallies have been compromised, but they also said there's no way to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way evidence one way or the other. So these machines were decommissioned by Virginia, and other states have also decommissioned them as well, both... Mississippi and Pennsylvania decertified these machines a while ago. I mean, they've got operating systems that date back to 2004.
Wow.
And they all had default passwords for Wi-Fi access.
It's crazy.
So this is actually a problem. This is one of the issues is that manufacturers are not really testing the machines properly, and there's no independent certification agency, and the public sector is not really qualified to judge whether they're secure or not. So recently, the National Institute of Standards and Technology and the Electronic Election Assistance Commission have gone together to help municipalities certify election machines. But the participation is voluntary, but at least there's a beginning in solving this vexing problem.
Mm-hmm. All right. We actually have the phones actually melted there for a minute.
Okay.
Our music up here.
All right.
And... All right, let's go to line numero uno. This is Sally, who is calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Dr.
Yes.
Schertz, go ahead and ask the question.
Yes, early in the show we talked about Douglas Reed Cutting, of the open source creator of a program called Hadoop. Where did the name Hadoop come from?
His toy yellow elephant.
That is correct.
Sally, congratulations. Yeah. You're our winner today. Dr. Schertz, please tell her what she's won.
You won two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. Just stay on the line, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Sally. We're going to turn you over to Andrew Mitchell, who is our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control. Hang on just a second. Make sure I press the right button. You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. You can hear us here every week on 1500 AM, and we will be back in just a moment with more of Tech Talk. So stand by.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Now let's talk about the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Internet of Things, of course, means that everything's going to be attached to the internet. But the problem is, we need standards.
Yes.
The Internet of Things as a name was first coined by the British visionary by the name of Kevin Ashton. Back in 1999, before the dot-com bubble had burst, he first used it to describe how internet-connected devices could change our lives. He thought that we'd have all these devices seamlessly connected to the internet. That would save us both time and money. Now, the idea is becoming mainstream as an idea. We have brands like Nest that will connect our heating system to the internet, or smoke detectors to the internet as Internet of Things. I've got the Amazon Echo in my kitchen, and I can talk to it, and it plays. If I want to listen to a Federal News Radio, I just say, Alexa, please listen to 1500 AM. And Alexa just dials up and gives me Federal News Radio over the internet.
Did you pick the name Alexa, or
no?
That was her name.
That was her name. You know, Alexa's nice. Now, if
you drive an Alexa, don't you?
No, Alexa. I think Alexa's. Now, if somebody in the house, by the way, is named Alexa, you can change the name.
You can change the name
to Amazon, but Amazon.
I don't like that name.
No,
as
Amazon
much.
doesn't have the same.
Are those the only two choices?
That's it.
Really?
But I like Alexa. And I say, Alexa, play this music for me or whatever.
Can you change her voice?
No.
Does she have a voice?
She has a voice.
Okay.
I mean, I also, if I've got audiobooks on my Inaudible, my Amazon Audible account,
mm-hmm.
I can say, Alexa, would you read my book? So I can sit there and she'll read my book to me over Audible, and or I can have her play.
Do you
play.
Have cookies and milk when she does that?
No, she can't deliver cookies and milk, but she's an example of an Internet of Things, for example.
I'm sorry to sidetrack you.
No, it's funny. I'm being it's a little box. I'm calling it she, but she has such a pleasant voice. Or you could have your security system send you an SMS alert, a text message if something is wrong. If somebody's breaking in, you could have your alarm system send you a text message. That would be like another example of an Internet of Things application. However, without standardization, things are going to fall apart because nothing's going to be able to talk to each other. And all the major players want to protect their space. So like Apple announced their HomeKit for the centralized control system that's tied to the iPhone ecosystem. It's pretty clear that Apple is not going to be wanting to talk to Google's Nest ecosystem. They're going to want to be separate because they each have their own proprietary standards. And then Samsung is in a race to try to connect all their devices to the internet. Like we have a Samsung smart TV, and it's connected to the internet trying to do things. But none of these talk to each other. Then I've got at home, I have, of course, my Philips Hue LED lights that are connected to my Wi-Fi. So, you know, nothing. I can control them with my iPhone, but my Philips Hue lights don't talk to anything. I've got my, and if your lights can't really talk to anything, then
what's the point?
All they can do is like
go
turn
on and off.
Yeah, turn on, go on and off, you know. But I want them to do more than that. But I can pick the color and everything. They're fun to play with.
That's pretty neat.
Then I've got another device that attaches my home theater system to Wi-Fi, so I can control it with my iPhone. So I got all sorts of things connected with this Internet of Things. So I've become very connected to it. But we need standards so they talk with each other. I don't like to have all these fights, because only the consumers lose in those battles.
That's right.
So in order to solve this problem, there is an independent internet platform that's called If This, Then That.
Mm-hmm.
If This, Then That. So, for instance, the Amazon Echo, Alexa, supports If Then, Then That. So I could program what they call different recipes.
Huh.
And I could say, if it's raining, send me a text message to wear a raincoat. And so it will check the weather, and if it's raining, it'll send me a text message that it's raining.
Here's what you need to do. You need to program your lights to come on based on the forecast, like blue for rain.
Uh-huh. I could do that.
Orange for sun.
So it turns out that the Amazon Echo will talk to my Philips Hue lights.
Mm-hmm.
So I could say, if it's raining, turn the lights blue. I could actually do that. If this, then that. I could actually do that. I could say, if it's hot outside, play my book. Read my book. Because I don't want to go outside, so I'll just start reading the book. So you can have if this, then that. Now, the interesting thing about the if this, then that platform means that you could have different systems that actually don't talk with each other. So I could have Apple communicating with Google through the if this, then that platform. So that may help solve the interoperability problem.
Pretty neat idea.
So anyway, so I get all these different recipes on my Amazon Echo. So this'll
take you a while to play with
so
that.
This is like just one of my toys.
Uh-huh.
And I just love that. So the Internet of Things, I think, is going to make a difference, because I can already see that, you know, you don't have to go to the computer. If I want to check the weather, I just say, Alexa, what's the weather? She gives me the weather. I say, or if I'm going to travel to Boston, Alexa, what's the weather in Boston? And so, now if I ask her some facts.
Can you ask her if the Nats won last night?
Yeah, I could. And
you'll get an answer?
Yeah, I'll get an answer. But if I ask her, say, who's the president of Pakistan, she's going to look up the Wikipedia page. The Wikipedia page happens to be wrong, so she gives me the wrong answer. But
there you go.
But there we go. So there you go.
Garbage in, garbage out.
That's right. So there you go. All you want to know about the Internet of Things, let's just check on those standards, make certain that they're interoperable.
If the doorbell rings, all the lights in the house flash red. You're in a Star Trek movie or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
Okay.
So let's talk about how to optimize your iPhone storage.
Please do, yes.
Because I'm always getting, now for the last week, I went through and did some of these things on my iPhone storage, and so I'm not getting my out of storage signals all the time. Because I made the mistake when I got this iPhone 5, I just got 16 gigabytes. This was before the latest iOS version came out, which is like a memory hog.
I've done the
so
same
everything
thing.
Ever since I've upgraded, you know, I keep getting these items. So there are a couple of things you can do. First of all, you want to find out which apps are hogging their space. So you can go to Settings, then General, and then Usage, and then click on Manage Storage, and you'll see a whole list of applications, and the ones that are using the most storage will be right there at the top. So I went in and I looked at the ones that were hogging mine, and if I wasn't using them, I just deleted them. You know, and so you end up installing, so you know, well, I may use it, but they just load up a lot of your memory, so I just You can always download them again if you want them. I just deleted them, and that was quite easily done. You also, the other thing that I did, I don't have any music on my iPhone anymore. I used to synchronize it with my music, my iTunes music library. Forget that now. I use Pandora. So I just stream the music. I use Pandora or I use Spotify. Mm-hmm. And so I've got both. I finally ended up paying, because I use Pandora a lot, I finally ended up paying $6 a month so I don't get ads. Because I guess I just got fed up with the Pandora ads. So I'm now of the five, I think they said only like 5% of the people actually pay for streaming. So I'm in the
You're in the elite.
I'm in the 5%. So I do that.
Representing.
Now you can optimize your phone storage using as far as pictures are can go. It turns out iOS 8 allows you to store low resolution versions of your picture on the phone, and they keep the high res in the iCloud.
Oh, no kidding.
That saves a lot.
I'll bet it does.
So you simply go to settings, then go to photos and camera, and then there's something called optimize phone storage. You click optimize phone storage. It's going to then only store shrunken versions of your pictures available, and all those have been in the iCloud. So if you click on the picture, it will download the high resolution. But when you're just sort of scanning through the looking at them, you don't really need the high resolution. We just look at them on the screen. Mm-hmm. That saves a lot.
Yeah, I'll bet.
That one thing saved a lot. So just go to settings, photos and camera, optimize phone storage. Also, delete all your old text messages. You know, when people send you pictures, you know, somebody will send you like a video and all that, those text messages stay on your phone forever, because typically the default setting is to keep texts forever.
Right.
And it just eventually just eats up all your storage. So delete your old text messages. You might even, now what I did, I went in and I just said, only keep my text messages for 30 days. So it automatically just after 30 days they're dumped, and so those few things will make a big difference. You can also you can back up your documents, and then you can delete them. Oh, the other thing is, if you're doing HDR, high dynamic range photos, it stores both the HDR result as well as the other pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually go to photos and camera, and you can deselect keep the normal photo, so you're only keeping the HDR photo. So that way you're not doubling up on everything.
Right.
So that's all. Oh, finally you can delete your played podcast, because I know everybody's listening to Tech Talk podcasts. I mean,
of course.
This is probably a big problem.
But you know what? Get them on the web.
Yeah. But
we store them for free.
We store them for free, but see, once you listen to it, it stays stored.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you want to delete them. So go to settings and go to the on your podcast player, and then go to episodes to keep, and then say only keep the unplayed episodes. Don't play. So once you play a podcast, you don't have to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just a few simple things. I did a few of those things, and I'll tell you, it really made a big, big difference in my phone storage.
Good.
So. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'd also like you to check out all of the programs there at Stratford University. Simply go to the Stratford University website, stratford.edu. Look around, health science, nursing, culinary arts, hospitality, business, accounting, IT, software engineering. It's a wide range of things. We're getting ready to offer two doctoral programs, by the way.
Oh, cool.
We got a lot of stuff going on. So make certain to check those out at stratford.edu.
If you tuned in late or would like to hear this program again in its entirety, tune in at 2 o'clock today here on Federal News Radio. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Baseball on the radio. Nats take on the Pirates here at 4:05, pregame at 3:30. We're under a flash flood watch, showers and thunderstorm today. Heavy rain tonight. We're going up to close to 90 degrees. Right now, 79, 10 o'clock.
Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, learn how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday morning.